reluctant hero in the story arc. And I realized, man, I have, like, throughout, I love the reluctant hero. It's one of my favorite tropes in all of literature. I really love, my favorite really is the reluctant hero who never really stops being reluctant about it. That's, like, one of those things I love in a fantasy, right? Not the one who's accepted the burden, da-da-da-da. The one that's always kind of like, I'm here, but I'm not, but at least he always says I don't want to be here, right? Yeah.
He's a sidekick.
Yeah, right? Like, yeah, he was almost always a sidekick. Usually never the main hero. So we're going to start with, what is your favorite reluctant hero? I have two, right, that I just thought of as I was doing this. One is everybody's favorite, Han Solo. Who doesn't love Han Solo? I'm not interested in being here. I'm not going to help you. Just kidding, I came back. And I'm going to leave the Alliance. I don't care about this Alliance. I'm just in it for the profit. Oh, I'm going to take care of the princess. Like, consistent.
That's a classic line, I know.
I know, yes. Like, just this. Oh, I could go on and on about that line. I have written papers for myself on that line and how it really is one of the most romantic lines in history. And it is not sarcastic. Oh, it's so good. But anyway, we're not here for that.
We'll talk after.
We'll talk after. So good. My other favorite one is from the Wheel of Time series, is Matt Cawthon. Now, if you've only saw the Amazon Prime, what is it, 2 or 3 season version, you don't know Matt. Okay, Matt, my favorite thing about Matt is, for example, in one of the later books, one of the women who grew up with Matt is remembering a time where Matt was, like, talking to a bunch of kids, and they're like, don't go in the water. I'm not going to save you if you start drowning. Stop playing in the water. Right? And the minute it looks like someone got, like, hurt or anything, that's the first one in. Matt is one of those people, and I just love him because he's just so, like, I'm not doing it, I'm not helping, you can't make me, and yet he's the most loyal person ever in the series. Like, he just keeps showing up. And so I just have this, like, I love that. I love Matt's, like, and what's so great about Matt is there's 14 books, right? Never in this, in the, each book's like 900 pages. Never, ever does Matt go, okay, fine, I need to be a hero, right? Huh. Matt goes all the way to the end, to the final battle of the world, and is like, and he even gets married on accident. and he's like, well, I guess I have to be loyal now, right? He's like, I can't keep sleeping with women because now I'm married. And, like, he's always, like, doing the right thing, but he never at any point says, this is what I want to be doing. He just does the right thing. He's like, I could be gambling. Like, this is what I could be doing right now. So I guess I have a soft spot for him. But what other reluctant heroes do people like? Kelly?
I don't know if this counts, but Good Omens Crowley.
Oh, yes, I think that does count.
He's literally a demon, and he has to help save the world.
Yes.
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 But, like, oh, just so bad.
Yeah.
And it's just really funny.
Yes. Because he's the, in the story Good Omens, he didn't mean to fall. Like, that's the whole thing. That was one of those things that you have to accept that Good Omens is very much fantasy.
Yes.
Even though it's your
And on a side note, My Hero Academia, Izuku Midoriya, he literally doesn't have powers in a world full of powers.
Uh-huh.
And he's all like, I'm still going to be a hero. I don't know what, I'm still studying to do it. And then, yeah.
Well, is that reluctance then?
I would say he's quite the opposite of it.
Reluctant, yeah. There's, like, I love
he's
Steve Rogers, but he's not a reluctant hero at all.
Like,
yeah, he's chasing it. So there's two types, right? There's the one that's like, I'm not doing it. You can't make me, right? And then they end up doing it anyway.
Okay, so separately, he's reluctant against his fate because technically he can't be a hero without help.
Okay, fair. All right, Winston.
A movie with two names: Edge of Tomorrow and Live, Die, Repeat. Anyone familiar with the movie? No? Okay. So, it's a future world where we're at war with these, like, alien things,
mm-hmm.
and Tom Cruise is the lead, and he doesn't want to do it, and he was, like, a military person, but not, like, a fighter, and then
mm-hmm.
he did something wrong, like, well, you're on the front line, and I was like, no, I'm not, so he goes on the front lines, because he had to, and they, like, drop him off, and the alien blood gets in him, and then he dies, and then he starts the day over again, and then he repeats that day over and over and over again the exact same way, and then he's like, I don't want to be here, I still want to be here, but now I, like, feel like I have to do this because I know how to, like, do everything.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, the whole movie is basically him, and then also finding Emily Blunt's character, who had the same thing happen to her. They work together to, like, end the war and save humanity, but he didn't want to do that.
Yes.
He was just along for the ride. It's a good movie, guys.
Yes.
Edge of Tomorrow.
Yeah, it was really bad branding. It came out Edge of Tomorrow, and then the title, the poster, just said Live, Die, Repeat. Then we started calling it Live, Die, Repeat, and they rebranded it. Well, this movie's Live, Die, Repeat now.
Yes. And that gets confusing for people.
Yeah, yeah.
So, all right. Anyone else, like... Okay. Well, I have a soft...
Noah been a reluctant hero?
Yeah, I mean, we're going to talk about two reluctant heroes today that, you know, when you compare and contrast people, it's, comes. So why do we have reluctance? And this is, you know, if you don't know this quote, like, this has been so quoted from Spider-Man that even the Spider-Man No Way Home made almost a joke out of it because it's like they all repeated the line, all the different Spider-Mans. Yes.
Recently, Amazon had Spider-Noir, and they kind of...
Yes, 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 they did.
It's like, I don't want any powers. No powers, no responsibility.
Exactly, right? This is the reluctant hero, because with great power comes great responsibility. All of the reluctant heroes I could think of did not want the responsibility. They didn't matter about their power. I don't, nope, don't want that responsibility. That's a lot of work, right? And I think... As I was reading, like, I really resonate with that, right? Like, I'm fine with not having power if I don't have the responsibility, right? And you think about that even with people you work with, right? The people who are very content at the level of the job that they have, right? I'm not trying to become anything else. I know in the Star Wars books, there's, like, the Rogue Squadron, and they're, like, the best pilots in the galaxy, and they try to promote them. And they're all like, this isn't the books that were before Disney took over, but they were like, no, I only want to fly my ship. Like, I do not want to be, like, the only thing that comes with a promotion is paperwork. So, like, there's this pull in this, like, I don't want the responsibility. That's really where the reluctant hero trope kind of comes from. Yes.
By technicality, would that mean that Rocket Raccoon is kind of like that?
You're going to have to expand on that. I've got to see where you're coming from.
I don't know. I just feel like he's all like, I'm just here. Like, I don't think that he's like, oh, first one to be like, yeah, let's go save the world.
No.
He's like, ew.
He's
kind
of resigned to his fate.
Yes. I
feel like because of the company he keeps, he's helped save the world. But it's just like, if he had the choice, I don't think.
Yeah, if he was with a different company, he would do something else. Right? I think,
yeah.
Like, Rocket's not the, like, the Steve Rogers, Black Panther, the, like, there's a problem, I need to fix it, right? Those are the anti-reluctant heroes, right? The people who are like, I saw the problem, I fixed the problem, done, right? Like,
the Doctor Strange book.
You haven't seen the Doctor Strange movie, so you don't get the call.
Oh, oh.
All right. So we're going to talk about two people who you always think to compare, Moses and Saul. We always compare these two, right? Well, actually, I would argue that both of these, Moses is the one most people talk about when you talk about reluctant heroes, but Saul is also a reluctant hero. And we're going to see how their two paths diverge. So your notes today are nothing but a Venn diagram, because we're going to compare and contrast Moses and Saul. Yes?
Quick question. We're talking Saul, King Saul.
King Saul, sorry.
Oh, I thought, okay.
Not Paul.
Thank you.
Saul. No, Paul was not reluctant, right? He got saved, and then
yeah.
He was like, I'm going to save everybody else.
Yeah, yeah.
I got a mission to do, right? No. We're going to talk about two people who were very, very reluctant. So first off, I just titled this the beginning because I want to show, this is, I think, very important. Can I have a volunteer read Exodus 3:7? This is Moses. Kelly.
Is that supposed to be the?
Yes.
Oh,
oh, sorry, I hit the T when I did the substitute. Yeah, sorry.
It's okay. All right, so the Lord said, I have indeed seen the misery of my people in Egypt. I have heard them crying out because of their slave drivers, and I am concerned about their suffering.
Okay, and then can someone read 1 Samuel 8:19-22? Luke, go ahead.
But the people refused to listen to Samuel. No, they said, we want a king over us. Then we will be like the other nations, with a king to lead us and to go out before us to fight our battles. When Samuel heard all the people, he said, all the people had said, he repeated it before the Lord. The Lord answered, listen to them and give them a king.
Okay, So the big difference right in the beginning that I wanted to touch before we get into anything is when we have God initiating the action, I've heard their suffering, versus people. We want a king. We want this God, right? So that's one of the big differences we have. And we're not going to look at 1 Samuel 8 too much. We will go back to Exodus 3. So I really wanted to make sure we hit that in the beginning. So we have God versus people. And people, not even like, we have a problem that needs solving. We want to be like other people. Everybody else got a king. I want a king too, right? Very much that high mindset. Like, you know, well, everybody else is wearing Nikes. I better wear Nikes, right? That's what the people are doing here. All right. Now we're going to look at the calls, okay? So we're going to start with the call of Moses, who I know a lot of this will be familiar for you all. So we're going to, like, anyway, we're going to really dig into this. Can I have someone read 1 through 5, 6?
Sure.
Go ahead. Just he can read the next one. Go.
Okay. Now Moses was tending the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian. And he led the flock to the far side of the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God.
Let me pause you real quick. So, sorry. For context, my bad. So, right, Moses, they were killing all the Hebrew babies because Pharaoh was like, wow, they keep multiplying, right? This is a problem. And Moses' mom sent him in a basket. He then gets raised by Pharaoh's household, right? That's a very important part of the story. He's raised in Pharaoh's household. Then he gets really mad because he sees how the Hebrews are treated. And then he kills an Egyptian overseer. And when he finds out other people know he killed him, he runs away to the desert. Mm-hmm. Right? So this is all in the first two chapters. It is a jam-packed exposition in the story. So now we are with Moses in Midian. And, you know, just he's a shepherd now. Go.
There the angel of the Lord appeared to him in flames of fire from within a bush. Moses saw that though the bush was on fire, it did not burn up. So Moses thought, I will go over and see this strange sight, why the bush does not burn up. When the Lord saw that he had gone over to look, God called to him from within the bush, Moses, Moses. And Moses said, here I am. Do not come any closer, God said. Take off your sandals, for the place where you are standing is holy ground. Then he said, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. At this, Moses hid his face because he was afraid to look at God.
The Lord said, I have indeed seen the misery of my people in Egypt. I have heard them crying out because of their slave drivers, and I am concerned about their suffering. So I have come down to rescue them from the hand of the Egyptians, and to bring them up out of that land and into a good and spacious land, a land flowing with milk and honey, the home of the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites. And now the cry of the Israelites has reached me, and I have seen the way the Egyptians are oppressing them. So now, go. I am sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. But Moses said to God, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? And God said, I will be with you. And this will be the sign to you that it is I who have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you will worship God on this mountain. Moses said to God, suppose I go to the Israelites and say to them, the God of your fathers has sent me to you. And they ask me, what is his name? And what shall I tell them?
God said to Moses, I am who I am. This is what you are to say to the Israelites. I am has sent me to you. God also said to Moses, say to the Israelites, the Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob has sent me to you. This is my name forever, the name you shall call me from generation to generation. So we're going to sum up a little bit here. So first off, we have God initiates this conversation, right? And God speaks directly to Moses. There's no intermediary here. He's, you know, shows up in a bush and he speaks directly. God sees how his people were being treated and he hears their cries. And Moses' immediate response is, who am I to do this? Right? We already kind of seeing the reluctance. Because Moses is like, I killed somebody, and I've been out in the desert for 40 years. And the other thing, right, is Egyptians really looked down upon shepherds, right? That was like the lowest of the low job. So he went from being like a prince, and probably not a like really high up prince, because, you know, he was the adopted daughter of a daughter and came out of the river, right? Like he wasn't Pharaoh's son. But to being a shepherd, right? Like how low can you fall, right? So he's very much, who am I? letting people finish writing. Yes, there you go.
Thank you.
So is the I am what in the previous, is that what God is saying we are calling as I am?
Yahweh, yeah. That's the name Yahweh. That's the I am who I am. That is God's name. So that's why, though, and a lot of times they say the God of your father Abraham. That's how they distinguish who God is, the God of your father Abraham, the God of Isaac, because there were lots of gods, right?
The same God.
Yeah.
All of these people before.
This God, yeah. And then we had Yahweh. All right.
But Yahweh translated as I am?
Okay, I am or I am who I am?
I am who I am. It's debated, but yeah.
Semantics.
The great I am, you know? So.
Why didn't they just use Yahweh?
Because the Hebrew people, the Israelites, the Hebrew people thought that it was, they took the third commandment very seriously of do not blaspheme the Lord's name. And they said if we don't say the Lord's name, we can't blaspheme the Lord's name. However, that's not actually true. You can easily blaspheme the Lord's name because everyone knows who you're talking about. Anyway, all right, let's keep going. So now we're going to shift over to Saul. Saul is, like, we're talking about 1,000 years later, at least. And Saul is this right after the Israelites are like, give us a king. And Samuel's like, you don't want a king. He's going to tax you. He's going to send your sons to war. Your life will be miserable. And they're like, no, we want a king, right? This is the kid who's like, your parents are like, you don't want Nikes. You're going to have to mow 1,800 lawns to raise the money for Nikes. You're going to regret this decision, and they're going to wear out or whatever. And the kids are like, no, I need Nikes.
I'm really thinking it's more like a pet. Like, you know, they you have all the responsibility. You're going to have to clean up. Wait, no, I'm going to have responsibility.
See, I can't relate to that because I love my pets. Like, they're not responsibility. They're just love.
I mean, but as children, you're not
love. Yeah. No,
you're
it's
looking
true.
At like, oh, I have a fluffy friend, and I can take.
I've had a dog more than I can like. I not didn't have a dog, right?
Oh.
So, like, I don't really remember life without a dog.
Oh.
So, like, for me, I understand what you're saying. For most people, I can't relate to that. Like, we pretty much always had a dog in my life. So
you're also responsible.
Sometimes. All right. We're gonna read the call of Saul, 1 Samuel 9:15-24. I kind of summed this up. Because I didn't want us to spend, we're going through a lot of scripture today. The right before this, Saul is going out to find his father's donkeys, okay? Can't find the father's donkeys, they're looking everywhere. And Saul's like, we better go home because, like, my dad's going to stop worrying about the donkeys and start worrying about us, right? So we got to go home. And then his servant says, wait, no, there's a seer, which is the old word for prophet, in this town. He'll tell us where the donkeys are. So then they go to see Samuel to find out about the donkeys. And they get a surprising answer. Mom, can you read 15 through 21, and then Tracy, can you read the next page?
Now, the day before Saul came, the Lord had revealed this to Samuel. About this time tomorrow, I will send you a man from the land of Benjamin. Anoint him ruler over my people Israel. He will deliver them from the hand of the Philistines. I have looked on my people, for their cry has reached me. When Samuel caught sight of Saul, the Lord said to him, this is the man I spoke to you about. He will govern my people. Saul approached Samuel in the gateway and asked, would you please tell me where the seer's house is? I am the seer, Samuel replied. Go up ahead of me to the high place, for today you are to eat with me, and in the morning I will send you on your way and will tell you all that is in your heart. As for the donkeys you lost 3 days ago, do not worry about them. They have been found. And to whom is all the desire of Israel is turned, if not to you and your whole family line? Saul answered, but I am not a Benjaminite. Benjamite? From the Samalas tribe of Israel, and it is not my clan, least of all the clans of the tribe of Benjamin. Why do you say such a thing to me?
Notice it says the desire of Israel, not the desire of God or anything, but everybody turn to you. All right, let's keep going.
Then Samuel brought Saul and his servant into the hall and seated them at the head of those who were invited, about 30 in number. Samuel said to the cook, bring the piece of meat I gave you and the one I told you to lay aside. So the cook took up the thigh with what was on it and set it in front of Saul. Samuel said, here is what has been kept for you. Eat, because it was set aside for you for this occasion from the time I said, I have invited guests. and Saul dined with Samuel that day. After they came down from the high place to the town, Samuel talked with Saul on the roof of his house. They rose about daybreak, and Samuel called to Saul on the roof, "Get ready, and I will send you on your way." When Saul got ready, he and Samuel went outside together. As they were going down to the edge of the town, Samuel said to Saul, "Tell the servant to go on ahead of us," and the servant did so. "But you stay here for a while so that I may give you a message from God."
Good. Okay. All right. So very much, I'm going to give you a message. So one, we already kind of talked about the people initiate this one. And then God speaks to Samuel, then to Saul, right? Like, he has to, we don't know if Saul just wasn't going to listen. We don't know if it's because everyone was already listening to Samuel. But there is very much a distinct, it's God, Samuel, Saul. I will say that after this, Saul does get to prophesy for a little bit because God changes his heart, which we're not going to talk a lot about. But he does, and the assumption there is that God was speaking directly to Saul then. And then instead of saying, "Who am I?" Saul really goes, "I am the least of all the tribes," right? This is kind of like being like, "Yo, I am from Brooklyn Park," or "I am from, like, this area." We all know this is not the area where we're looking for a king, right? This is not my family line, you know, this is not kingdom. We're not kingdom people, right? So he very much has that kind, but he refers to the tribe, and it refers to his tribe, and I think that's interesting. And then he joins for dinner fairly easily. And what I mean by that, Moses has this whole, like, "Not gonna do it. Who am I? No, don't like this." And Saul's like, "I like meat." And he just kind of sits down and goes, and I think, to me, when I was, like, looking at this, because Saul, we know throughout the story of Saul that he's very arrogant, right? Like, we see that. Later on, he never repents, really. He's like, "Oops, I messed up, da-da-da-da-da." It kind of, like, I really, as I was reading through this and looking at this, I was, like, kind of see, like, the beginnings of that arrogance, especially when he's like, "Who's my tribe, not who am I?" Like, "Oh, yeah, I am the best in my tribe." Right? Yes.
I could have sworn earlier in the beginning of the verses, like, before 21, I think, he was talking about, we need to get these donkeys back before my dad starts worrying. Not about the donkeys, but about me.
Yes.
But then he's all like, "You know what? I could go for some meat," right? Like, he completely forgets the fact that he was worried about his dad worrying about him.
Yes. Yes. That's a good point, too. I needed to get home because my dad's going to worry about me. He's like, "Ooh, supper."
Like, that was weird. I was just like,
fair. All right. So we have this going on, and now we're going to talk about the refusal of the call, right? Because you can't have a reluctant hero if they don't refuse the call. That is, you know, this is part of the story arc, usually. And when I think of reluctant heroes, they're the ones who, like, really refuse. There's some people who give, like, a token refusal, you know, but, like, no thanks. So we're going to read Exodus 4, 1 through 17. Kelly, can you read that this time?
Moses answered, "What if they do not believe me or listen to me and say, 'The Lord did not appear to you'?" Then the Lord said to him, "What is that in your hand?" "A staff," he replied. The Lord said, "Throw it on the ground." Moses threw it on the ground and it became a snake, and he ran from it. Then the Lord said to him, "Reach out your hand and take it by the tail." So Moses reached out and took hold of the snake, and it turned back into a staff in his hand. "This," said the Lord, "is so that they may believe that the Lord, the God of their fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob, has appeared to you." Then the Lord said, "Put your hand inside your cloak." So Moses put his hand inside his cloak, and then he took it out. The skin was leprous. It had become as white as snow.
Beautiful. And will you continue?
"Now put it back into your cloak," he said. So Moses put his hand back into his cloak, and when he took it out, it was restored, like the rest of his flesh. Then the Lord said, "If they do not believe you or pay attention to the first sign, they may believe the second. But if they do not believe those two signs or listen to you, take some water from the Nile and pour it on the dry ground. The water you take from the river will become blood on the ground." Moses said to the Lord, "Pardon your servant, Lord. I have never been eloquent, neither in the past nor since you have spoken to your servant. I am slow of speech and tongue." The Lord said to him, "Who gave human beings their mouths? Who makes them deaf or mute? Who gives them sight or makes them blind? Is it not I, the Lord? Now go, I will help you speak and will teach you what to say. But Moses said, pardon your servant, Lord. Please send someone else.
I just, one of my favorite lines Moses said. Please send someone else, right? Literally anybody else. Right? And this is like, I mean, you know, I always joke about this, but imagine actually, like, talking directly to God, right? And then being like, no, send someone else. Like, you know? Like, because there is definitely some boldness, even though he says he's slow of speech and tongue, but it's happening, to be able to look at God even as he is, you know, in a burning bush, right? And be like, no. technically, he doesn't say no, but, you know, but he is definitely trying to find a way out, right? First, he's like, they're not going to believe me, right? And so God's like, I got that. And he's like, I can't speak. God's like, who made human's mouths? Like, if I can make a mouth, I can fix your speech impediment. Like, you know?
I just find it really funny that, like, God didn't give him one, but three.
I know.
Different things.
I know.
So, like, look. This is gonna work.
Yes.
I promise you. Yeah.
Yes. And there's what we kind of forget about Moses, too, though, is that then the Lord's anger burned against Moses, right? So he says, please send someone out. And God's been patient with Moses, right? He's been patient. And then God's like, I can just, like, stop. Right? Like, you know,
I told
you so. Yeah, like, this is the parent. Yeah, that's a great example. This is the parent saying, like, when a kid asks why three times and you give them really thoughtful answers as to why, and then they say why again, and you're just like, because I said so, right? What about your brother Aaron the Levite? I know he can speak well. He is already on his way to meet you, and he will be glad to see you. You shall speak to him and put words in his mouth, and I will help both of you speak and will teach you what to do. He'll speak to the people for you, and it will be as if he were your mouth, as if you were God to him. But take this staff in your hand so you can perform the signs with it. So, even though God's really angry, right, he still, like, accommodates Moses. He's like, please send someone else. No, but I'll send someone with you.
You'll have a friend.
Yeah, like, right? You're going to go with your brother. Your brother's all excited to see you anyway. It'll be a good time. Right? So, Moses lacked confidence in himself, so he didn't trust God to use him. So, this is, Moses is like when your humility becomes lack of self-esteem, when it goes too far, because you're too much like, God can't use me, and you really are doubting the power of God, right? And that's why his anger burns against him, because he's doubting what God is capable of, right? So, this is Moses' crucial issue here, is confidence and lack of confidence in himself. And this is really important, and I think it's something we kind of miss very easily, is degradation of self leads to a degradation of God. When you start saying, I can't do this, I'm no good at this, or I'm no good, you know, and I'm not talking about actual humility, right? I'm talking about when you start being like, oh, I can't do that, or false humility is all. But like, that very much that I'm not good enough, right? Because what you're actually saying is that someone who bears the image of God isn't good enough. So God isn't good enough. So Moses is a... That's what we're talking about. Moses, this is why God's anger burns against Moses, right? There is no way that you can put yourself down without putting God down. Like, I remember I was telling my mom, talking to my mom a little bit this morning about my therapy and healing journey and all of that. And I used to be really bad... about, I was so anxious all of the time, right? Like, I was living in my head. Like, I mean, I remember having, like, brief panic attacks in the middle of teaching at school and stuff. And I would dig my nails into my arm to help myself focus because the pain was like a catalyst of focus, right? And I remember very distinctly at one point, right, as this was going on, God being like, seeing Jesus's arm over my arm and him and like my nails digging into his flesh, and he says, you can't hurt yourself without hurting me. And I remember just being really mad, actually. That was my response, because I was like, I don't want to hurt you, this is about me, right? Like, I was so mad. Jesus tried to be all loving and compassionate, and I was, you know, and I responded with fire. But like that we can't, right? Sometimes we're like, well, you know, it's just, I'm not good enough. Well, if you feel that way, then God isn't enough. So that's a really important thing to remember. Now we're going to go to the other side of the spectrum and talk about Saul's refusal. So 1 Samuel 10:17-27. Winston, will you read, and then Tracy, will you finish up?
Samuel summoned the people of Israel to the Lord at Mizpah and said to them, "This is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. I brought Israel up out of Egypt, and I deliver you from the power of Egypt and all the kingdoms that oppressed you. But you have now rejected your God, who saved you out of all your disasters and calamities. And you have said, 'No, appoint a king over us.' So now present yourselves before the Lord by your tribes and clans." When Samuel had all Israel come forward by tribes, the tribe of Benjamin was taken by lot. Then he brought forward the tribe of Benjamin, clan by clan, and clan was taken. Finally, Saul, son of Kish, was taken. But when they looked for him, he was not to be found. So they inquired further of the Lord, "Has the man come here yet?" And the Lord said, "Yes, he has hidden himself among the supplies." They ran and brought him out, and as he stood among the people, he was a head taller than any of the others. Samuel said to all the people, "Do you see the man the Lord has chosen? There is no one like him among all the people."
I love this, right? Because Saul is a head taller than anyone, right? And he's hiding among the supplies, right? I just, it's like if Winston was trying to hide behind me, right? Nobody sees me, right? I just have this image, right? Like of, you know, the child hiding behind the tree that this is big, you can't see me. Like, obviously, I'm assuming he was ducking or whatnot, but it just seems like a very poor choice of hiding.
Oh, sorry.
I was like, what does
I'm trying to get back on so I can take screenshots.
Gotcha.
There we go.
Go ahead.
Then the people shouted, "Long live the king." Samuel explained to the people the rights and duties of kingship. He wrote them down on a scroll and deposited it before the Lord. Then Samuel dismissed the people to go to their own homes. Saul also went to his home in Gibeah, accompanied by valiant men whose hearts God had touched. But some scoundrel said, "How can this fellow save us?" They despised him and brought him no gifts, but Saul kept silent.
Talk about the people who, the scoundrels, they're the ones who, like, "I want to be a good king."
I didn't know it was up for grabs.
Right? Kind of thing. But anyway. Okay, so we talked about this. Saul hid among the supplies. That's his way of saying no. Like, if they can't find me. Because Saul, you know, Saul enjoyed the privilege of king. Of the, "Oh, I get to eat this nice meat, have this nice meal. Ooh, they're going to give me some responsibility. I think I'm going to go hide over there. Can't see me." Right? And this is after Saul, God has touched Saul and allowed him to prophesy, right? This is not, like, Saul has already sort of been in the role, right? Like, this is his presentation to the people. God's anointed him. They've moved on. And this is Saul.
He's reaped some of the glory.
Right? He's reaped some of the benefits and then was like, "I don't want to do this anymore."
I mean, it almost feels like, you know, it was a more dramatic entrance this way of, like, you know, "Okay, now let's bring out Saul! Look how big he is!"
Yeah, there is definitely that, because everyone was like, "Oh." He's hiding. Okay, so this is a kind of an end story, but false humility will lead you to ruin. So Saul, right, never, he has a lot, I think, as Luke was saying, dramatic interest. Saul has a lot of false humility, I feel like. And when we see later, I couldn't go into all of this because we'd be here all week, but right later on, Saul is all, Samuel gives him one decree, literally happens like right after this, and then 3 chapters later, he's broken the one job he had, right? Like, he was like, "Don't offer sacrifices without me, I'll be there." And then Saul was like, "Oh no, Samuel's not here, I better offer sacrifices," right? And then Saul's like, "What have you done?" He's like, "I didn't do anything wrong. I mean, I just thought, like, oh, I should do it," you know? Like, Saul, very much throughout his whole story, has a lot of false humility. And I think we see it here, just like as Kelly was saying earlier. First, he was like, "My dad's going to be worried. Oh, well, if you prepared a feast for me, I'm sure he won't be too worried." I did cut out as for time. There's this whole part where he goes back where his uncle's, his uncle, not his dad, which is interesting, says, where were you? We were all worried about you. Right? And then hiding among the slow eyes. Like, right, it doesn't really feel like it was a good... he was smart enough to know he wasn't very good. So anyway, false humility will lead you to Rome. Right? That's what happens to Saul. Fast-forwarding through things. So kind of as we do this, I wanted to look at two different things in our lives, right? Because I think whether you really... Now, I know at the end of the stories, right, Moses and Saul obviously go very different ways. Moses eventually learns that he's got to be the prophet, priest, image, and he leads the people of Israel. And you see throughout the story of Exodus, like, first Aaron is always with him. But eventually he's going to Pharaoh by himself. His confidence grows, right? You see that throughout, and he's like, I can trust God. Look what he can do, right? Then you have Saul, who's all like, I just want to, like, check boxes off that I did the things and, like, you know, move on, not a try. He's never once is really trusting God. And Saul is a very bad king, which is exactly what God said would happen, right? He was like, you're not going to like this, right? And the Israelites didn't like it. Anyway, but he ends up dead, right? So, and killed in battle. All right, so as we talk today, or kind of wrap up, I want you to think about, where are you reluctant to trust God? Where are you like Moses, where God is calling you to something, and you're like, who am I to do this? Who am I? Or, on the opposite side, where do you want the easier way out, right? It's not so much that I'm reluctant, but I don't want to have to wait for God. I don't really want to have to be like, I want a king now, right? I would like this problem solved now. And God, I know you might solve it better, but this will solve it now. And then lastly, I want you to think about what causes your reluctance. So we're going to have some journaling time. Right now, we're going to listen to, for those of you who are at home, if you want to listen along, I'm going to leave these questions up, but we're going to listen to the song The Call by Regina Spektor, because it's a beautiful song. And while we do that, I'm going to give you journaling time for as long as the song is. So it's about 3 minutes.
It started out as a feeling, which then grew. Supreme that you have Let your memories grow stronger and stronger till they're before your eyes. You'll come back when they call you. No need to say goodbye. You'll come back when they call you. No need to say goodbye.
I would like to open it up. I always like to offer people the opportunity to share. Obviously, you never have to, but I think it's an important, especially like to be held accountable to things. Speaking them helps. But again, I don't know where you are. I don't know if God's speaking to you. So I never force people to share, but that's why I provide the opportunity. Kelly?
Well, first of all, I help her stay tough.
You were.
I was all like, yeah. I was all like, okay, so I don't know. Because I'm like, I don't really feel like I'm reluctant to God specifically. I'm just more self-reliant.
Mm.
And I know I said I'm working on it. like giving up control about certain things. Like, I just feel like sometimes I can handle it on my own. And or I can probably do it better than others. Not that I'm better than God. No, that's not what I'm saying. Lord, Father, I'm sorry. but I feel like, oh, he's too busy. He's too important to deal with this. Let me take care of that.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. I could probably use some help with stuff, but don't ask for it.
You're just saying you don't ask God or you don't ask people?
I don't ask God
or both. So both.
Yes, I more so pray for other people. I don't really pray for myself a lot.
Yeah,
that's why.
Yes.
That's why if you use the prayer guide, there was a whole block that just said pray for yourself. I don't know if you use that one, but it is an important prayer, as well. Yes.
I will say, because that little devotional that Katie has, I mean, it has a prayer before housekeeping, starting housekeeping,
oh.
Pray for paying bills, pray before
every moment holy. I think everyone has a copy except for maybe the Gordons, because I think Tina bought it for people before you all joined us.
But the thing about that little booklet is
so good.
It is good. But it's like I can just look at it and say, ooh, I probably should pray first. I don't even have to open it and pray. And it is, you can pray about everything.
Mm-hmm.
And in truly the benefits, the blessings, everything.
I mean, it even has like before consuming media. Or like, you know,
or after finishing a book.
Beloved book. It really says beloved, but like it is, the whole premise is it's called Every Moment Holy. There's now three. I actually want to get the third one. But it's like they had a prayer I liked during COVID, which was like a prayer for first responders. But it's basically trying to take it so that every moment, and they even have short ones to like memorize, like for like, you know, irritation with a child. Or like
and I have no.
They have two prayers for diapers because
yes.
So many diapers.
Yeah, so many diapers, right? Yes. But like it also reframes things into, I know, let me just finish. To making them holy. Because I don't go thinking, oh, I gotta change diapers, this is holy. Right? Like generally I don't, but yeah, go ahead, finish. But, yeah.
It's not that I'm gonna pick that up and pray before I dust, but the fact is it's worthy to God that I do this job, you know, it makes it worthy to me. Even though it's something that it's not stimulating, or it's not world-changing, it's not even house-changing, well, dusting maybe. But, it, you know what I'm saying? It's like, it makes my life count. And, when, you know, and I just really, it allows me to acknowledge that my life counts. And especially when I don't get a paycheck. I mean, when you get a paycheck, that's a great reformation. You know, that really reaffirms your worth in the world, right? So when you're not getting a paycheck, all of a sudden it's like, you know, well, who cares if I don't do laundry all week? Or if I, you know, or if I walk the dog, or if I let the
oh,
pile up. You know, but you know, it does. It really, yeah. I'm a big one about everything is worthy of prayer.
Yeah,
and
the author writes beautifully.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes I just, like, can read.
I'm not trying to memorize the prayers.
No, but, like, he does help when you look at some of the prayers, you're like sitting there like, huh, I could pray before. I don't think of going praying before I go shopping, but it has a whole, like, you know, and all of those things. So, and it really just kind of makes me.
I do.
I know. My mom does pray when she shops. Especially for gifts. Let me tell you, if my mom buys you a gift, she has prayed about it for weeks. I just want you to know that. There is, yeah, she does. She spends a lot of that. But anyway, thank you for sharing, Kelly. And we've all, tomorrow night, we'll all help hold you accountable to praying for yourself at prayer and Monday night prayer.
Okay.
She's like, no, thank you. I can see it in her face.
I'm like, what am I going to pray for?
You don't even have to tell us.
Yeah.
You don't have to say. You just have to say, you know, hey, I tried it before the red light and it worked. You know, or a parking spot. You remember in Florida when you guys were down there, you prayed for a parking spot?
Yeah, we did.
We prayed for a parking spot.
Yeah.
And we got one right
every
in front
time.
Of the, yes,
yeah.
Right in front of the beach. Literally on the beach.
Yeah.
It was. Other prayer requests?
Wait.
Prayer request. Sorry, answers to this. I'm sorry.
It's okay. We were talking about prayers.
But we did. And then I got confused. Forgive me. Anyone else want to share about where you feel like you're reluctant to trust God or want the easy way out?
I always want the easy way out.
Yeah.
I always. Who wants to scrub a toilet? But I'm serious. I mean, I don't understand that. Because who wants it to be hard?
Yeah, who wants the hard way? That's the real
question. Yeah.
Who are you trying to...
allowed to be happy without drama, or that I was allowed to be happy, like that I didn't need to suffer to be good, right? But on that note, I do really like a challenge. I get bored on the easy way. That's apparently a me thing, or maybe it's just an 8 thing on the Enneagram. We are called the Challenger, right? It's that was too easy.
It must be wrong.
Yeah, it can't be
this easy.
Yeah.
I must have done it wrong.
But I also...
Me and Paul just kind of need to do expert mode and Marvel soon.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll talk
about it. Anyway, the easy way out. The other thing, what I think of as well is, there are times, Israel, right? We want to be like the other people. And, get-rich-quick schemes, right? Those are easy way out. Or, where you don't trust God. And, you take... Actually, the book we just finished, right? Bethany Waits was like, I could stay and pursue this or do this. Or I could fake my death and go live off of $10 million. And I'm just going to do that, right? You remember that? Sorry, spoiler alert.
There's nothing easy about that. She had to go with all her family and friends. I mean, I'm all for Bethany.
Again, she wants the easy way out. I was like, I look at Bethany and I'm like...
I've done it the hard way.
I look at Bethany and I was like, how dare you? You are so selfish. And she's like, I did it. Anyway, anyone else want to share? That's okay. All right, well, I do hope whatever you were journaling about and talking with God about that you... spend some time doing whatever it is he's calling you to do. I don't know what that looks like for you individually. Us collectively right now, show up to Thursday's meeting. I'll do another announcement because not everyone's here on time. So Thursday's Zoom, Luke's going to do that. Especially if you're detail-oriented, you need to be there because I'm not detail-oriented. Luke's going to have a virtual meeting on Zoom. He'll send out a link to plan/market, talk about marketing and things like that for the chalk, the art in the market.
Canva.
So. And Canva.
I need the Canva login.
I can show you the Canva login. I can just add you if you have one. I just add you to the account.
Okay, can't you just say the easy way out is trusting in God?
Well, sure, but does it feel that way?
Oh, yeah.
I do not.
I don't think so.
I have two thoughts on that. There is the top-out, Jesus take the wheel and I'm not getting the gas.
Yeah.
And... And then there's the hard way, which is, you know, going to Pharaoh, who could literally kill you. Like, I mean, I feel like, you know, as someone who, you know, one of their prime vices is sloth, and, you know, I feel, when you were talking about, you know, who wants me the hard way, I'm right there with you. I have definitely, in the same way that people can use God as an excuse for wrath and other vices, that you can totally do that with a, yeah, I'm just going to let God do it, and I'm not going to do anything. That's sloth, that's not virtue, that's sorry. I am, and when I say sorry, I mean that. I really would.
You know, I really want to be on the right side.
I would really like Jesus to take the wheel while I'm in backseat taking a nap.
That's not how it works.
Honestly, I don't think waiting is easy at all.
Mm-mm.
Because sometimes it's on God's time, and I'd be like, I need this done now.
That happens a lot.
So
you're like, what are you doing, God? This feels slow.
So I'm like, how about I just expedite? Waiting is hard.
Yeah, it is.
So I don't think that's easy at all.
No, it is. And I can't even say it doesn't really get easier later on either. There's a lot of things that I can look at and say, you know, hey, it's not that big a deal. You know, in the big scheme of things, but
mm-hmm.
waiting, you're right, waiting is difficult. Well, it's waiting and not getting the yes. That's difficult, I think.
Yes, my mother has a really hard time telling people no, so I think she just accepts, like, I was going to tell her yes, too. Right? So my mother doesn't like to hang out with children. This is the real reason, is she doesn't like to say no, and she knows you have to say no with children. So children love hanging out with my mom.
Sure,
it's not mutual.
Sure.
I know that.
So you need a no day, not a yes day.
Yeah, oh, yes. She definitely needs a no day. So, anyway, on that note, we're going to take
care of it. But on the other hand, that was a very good mother, right?
You were excellent. And this is really important, and I think it's something we kind of miss very easily, is degradation of self leads to a degradation of God. When you start saying, I can't do this, I'm no good at this, or I'm no good, you know, and I'm not talking about actual humility, right? I'm talking about when you start being like, oh, I can't do that, or false humility is all. But, like, that very much that I'm not good enough, right? Because what you're actually saying is that someone who bears the image of God isn't good enough. So God isn't good enough. So Moses is a, that's what we're talking about. Moses, this is why God's anger burns against Moses, right? There is no way that you can put yourself down without putting God down. Like, I remember I was telling my mom, talking to my mom a little bit this morning about my therapy and healing journey and all of that. And I used to be really bad about, I was so anxious all of the time, right? Like, I was living in my head. Like, I mean, I remember having, like, brief panic attacks in the middle of teaching at school and stuff. And I would dig my nails into my arm to help myself focus because the pain was like a catalyst of focus, right? And I remember very distinctly, at one point, right, as this was going on, God being like, seeing Jesus' arm over my arm and him and like my nails digging into his flesh. And he says, you can't hurt yourself without hurting me. And I remember just being really mad, actually. That was my response, because I was like, I don't want to hurt you. This is about me, right? Like, I was so mad. Jesus tried to be all loving and compassionate. I was, you know, and I responded with fire. But like that we can't, right? Sometimes we're like, well, you know, it's just, I'm not good enough. Well, if you feel that way, then God isn't enough. So that's a really important thing to remember. Now we're going to go to the other side of the spectrum and talk about Saul's refusal. So 1 Samuel 10, 17 through 27. Winston, will you read, and then Tracy, will you finish up?
Samuel summoned the people of Israel to the Lord at Mizpah and said to them, this is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. I brought Israel up out of Egypt, and I deliver you from the power of Egypt and all the kingdoms that oppressed you. But you have now rejected your God, who saved you out of all your disasters and calamities. And you have said, no, appoint a king over us. So now present yourselves before the Lord by your tribes and clans. When Samuel had all Israel come forward by tribes, the tribe of Benjamin was taken by lot. Then he brought forward the tribe of Benjamin, clan by clan, and clan was taken. Finally, Saul, son of Kish, was taken. But when they looked for him, he was not to be found. So they inquired further of the Lord, has the man come here yet? And the Lord said, yes, he has hidden himself among the supplies. They ran and brought him out, and as he stood among the people, he was a head taller than any of the others. Samuel said to all the people, do you see the man the Lord has chosen? There is no one like him among all the people.
I love this, right? Because Saul is a head taller than anyone, right? And he's hiding among the supplies, right? I just, it's like if Winston was trying to hide behind me, right? Nobody sees me, right? I just have this image, right? Like, of, you know, the child hiding behind the tree that this is big, you can't see me. Like, obviously, I'm assuming he was ducking or whatnot, but it just seems like a very poor choice of hiding.
Very poor choice.
Oh, sorry. I was like, what does
I'm trying to get back on so I can take screenshots.
Gotcha.
There we go.
Go ahead.
Then the people shouted, long live the king. Samuel explained to the people the rights and duties of kingship. He wrote them down on a scroll and deposited it before the Lord. Then Samuel dismissed the people to go to their own homes. Saul also went to his home in Gibeah, accompanied by valiant men, his heart God had touched. But some scoundrel said, how can this fellow save us? They despised him and brought him no gifts, but Saul kept silent.
Talk about the people who, the scoundrels, they're the ones who, like, I wanted to be good king.
I didn't know it was up for grabs.
Right? Kind of thing. But anyway. Okay, so we talked about this. Saul hid among the supplies. That's his way of saying no. Like, if they can't find me. Because Saul, you know, Saul enjoyed the privilege of king. Of the, oh, I get to eat this nice meat, have this nice meal. They're going to give me some responsibility. I think I'm going to go hide over there. Can't see me. Right? And this is after Saul, God has touched Saul and allowed him to prophesy, right? This is not, like, Saul has already sort of been in the role, right? Like, this is his presentation to the people. God's anointed him. They've moved on. And this is Saul.
He's reaped some of the glory.
Okay? He's reaped some of the benefits and then was like, I don't want to do this anymore.
I mean, it almost feels like, you know, it was a more dramatic entrance this way of like, you know, okay, now let's bring out Saul! Look how big he is!
Yeah, there is definitely that, because everyone was like, oh. He's hiding. Okay, so this is a kind of an end story, but false humility will lead you to ruin. So Saul, right, never, he has a lot, I think, as Luke was saying, dramatic interest. Saul has a lot of false humility, I feel like. And when we see later, I couldn't go into all of this because we'd be here all week, but right later on, Saul is all, Samuel gives him one decree, literally happens like right after this, and then three chapters later, he's broken the one job he had, right? Like, he was like, don't offer sacrifices without me, I'll be there. And then Saul was like, oh no, Samuel's not here, I better offer sacrifices, right? And then Saul's like, what have you done? He's like, I didn't do anything wrong, I mean, I just thought, like, oh, I should do it, you know? Like, Saul, very much throughout his whole story, has a lot of false humility. And I think we see it here, just like as Kelly was saying earlier. First, he was like, my dad's going to be worried. Oh, well, if you prepared a feast for me, I'm sure he won't be too worried. I did cut out as for time. There's this whole part where he goes back where his uncle, not his dad, which is interesting, says, where were you? We were all worried about you. Right? And then hiding among the slow eyes. Like, right? It doesn't really feel like it was a good... he was smart enough to know he wasn't very good. So anyway, false humility will lead you to Rome. Right? That's what happens to Saul. Fast-forwarding through things. So kind of as we do this, I wanted to look at two different things in our lives, right? Because I think... whether you relate, Now, I know at the end of the stories, right, Moses and Saul obviously go very different ways. Moses eventually learns that he's got to be the prophet, priest, image, and he leads the people of Israel. And you see throughout the story of Exodus, like, first Aaron is always with him, but eventually he's going to Pharaoh by himself. His confidence grows, right? You see that throughout, and he's like, I can trust God, look what he can do, right? Then you have Saul, who's all like, I just want to, like, check boxes off that I did the things and, like, you know, move on, not a try. He's never once is really trusting God. And Saul is a very bad king, which is exactly what God said would happen, right? He was like, you're not going to like this, right? And the Israelites didn't like it. Anyway, but he ends up dead, right? So, and killed in battle. All right, so as we talk today, or kind of wrap up, I want you to think about, where are you reluctant to trust God? Where are you like Moses, where God is calling you to something, and you're like, who am I to do this? Who am I? Or, on the opposite side, where do you want the easy way out, right? It's not so much that I'm reluctant, but I don't want to have to wait for God. I don't really want to have to be like, I want a king now, right? I would like this problem solved now. And God, I know you might solve it better, but this will solve it now. And then lastly, I want you to think about what causes your reluctance. So we're going to have some journaling time. Right now we're going to listen to, for those of you who are at home, if you want to listen along, I'm going to leave these questions up, but we're going to listen to the song, The Call, by Regina Spektor, because it's a beautiful song. And while we do that, I'm going to give you journaling time for as long as the song is. So it's about 3 minutes.